I have something quick about family, but from a different perspective. I'd like to tie that together with another responsibility for the church. I don't want to seem impolite, Larry, but you know, we're pretty far north. We're another 100 miles. They don't speak Spanish anymore. And up here they have the local dialect is a little different. There's a subtle but important difference between skewered and skewed. So I've been perplexed about... I'd be glad to fill in for you, Larry. I'm sure there are a lot of people here who'd like to... Thank you. I appreciate, though, seriously, the concept of that Larry Gallegos has been bringing to our attention about our responsibility being perhaps beyond just the immediate, that even if maybe the parents aren't the ones that are going out into the field, maybe God gives some of us a vision of what's going to happen, what needs to happen. Maybe it's our children or our grandchildren that go out to the work. So it's important to see the gospel that in the perspective that God sees it from generation to generation. And in that setting, I was reading in Jeremiah, and I came to Jeremiah 31. I've told many of you, I'll probably tell many of you again too, that now that I have we named our children Bible names or names with meanings that had to do with what God's call was on our family at the time we had our children. And now our children have gone on to give their children names that the grandparents can't even pronounce. I mean, these are good Bible names. But one of these grandchildren is named Elias, and I brought this verse up often. The last two verses of the Old Covenant read, "Behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet," that's the Elias to come, "before that great and dreadful day of Yahweh. And he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to the fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." And of course, we know, we read the end of the book, we know that at the end there is a great curse coming upon the earth. And Jeremiah is one of those who speak of that in chapter 30, verse 7. "Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble." He's one of the ones who uses this phrase of Jacob's trouble, the tribulation that's coming upon the Jews at the end. Now we know that the Jews have had plenty of tribulation. They've been in captivity several times. They've returned to the land. They've been despised in various places in the earth. We've had the Holocaust in the meantime. And yet, this time of Jacob's trouble has not been fulfilled. Verse 10 reads, "Therefore fear thou not, O my servant Jacob, saith Yahweh, neither be dismayed, O Israel, for lo, I will save thee from afar, and thy seed from the land of their captivity, and Jacob shall return, and shall be in rest, and be quiet, and none shall make him afraid." And of course, when the Lord Jesus comes back to rule and reign with his holy angels and with the saints, there's going to come a time when Israel will be in the land. They will return, and they will be there in rest and quiet, and God shall reign the earth from there. But before that time comes, there's going to come some tribulation upon the earth. And we know that the Christians, believers, along with Israel, will be persecuted in the most awful way before that time comes. Just before that time comes. And so as I read these verses here in Jeremiah, I thought about the hearts of the fathers being turned to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers. You know, Israel is going to be regathered too, and their families are going to be restored. Some through the resurrection, I suppose, as the Lord comes back, and others will be carried on the shoulders of kings from other parts of the earth. And some of those that don't even know that they're in captivity will be brought. One of the brothers here at one of the conferences told me, was from the Ukraine, and told me of a group of Jewish-speaking people who live someplace north of Israel that don't even know that they're Jews. They speak Hebrew. They've forgotten that they're Jews. I wouldn't be surprised if those people be brought back. The point that I thought as this happens, as the tribulation occurs and as believers go through this tribulation, you know, the purpose, one of the purposes of the church in evangelizing, Paul points out, is to make the Israelites, to make the Jews jealous. And as I look out over the things that are going on in the earth, there's a lot of, I see a lot of effort put into making our nation and other nations politically somehow involved in Israel. But I don't see anything in all of this that would make them jealous to know the God that we know. I see some other things going on that I fear are going to end in real tragedy. But I don't see that happening. Maybe once in a while, I can think of one event in my life where there was a Jew in my life that I had a chance to witness to. It's not a real common occurrence, at least in the circles that I travel. But I thought, as this tribulation occurs, and as they take us believers to task, and take our families away and do things, the whole world is going to see that. And I wonder if part of what will happen during the tribulation is that as our families, as they see how we love our families, if there won't be an element of testimony given that will be irresistible to a people whose only identity is their family. I mean, if they can't trace their lineage to Abraham through Isaac, they're not Jews. Well, there are some proselytes. But, I mean, it's all about family. And so as believers are put to the test, and the Jews see that and hear about it and come to know it, I wonder if during that period of time there won't be a turning. A return of the Jews to their God.